Alicia's response was curt, but he did obey.
"Where are my ears?"
asked Driver.
On their way,"
said Ula, hastily noting that Pippaliti's shuttle had left the Commodore and was awaiting instructions. Jet sent the pilot permission to obey Striver's orders, within reason, and synchronized its comm with the First Blood's.
"We're your third ship,"
Ula told the Mandalorian.
"You can use our location as a fixed receiver."
"Don't forget to share your data," said Jet. "If Klunker can work out the code, we might gain ourselves a better tactic than just blowing things up."
"You think you could slice into their command systems?"
Ula asked.
"I'm not promising anything."
Something else for them to keep an eye on, thought Ula. As if there weren't enough things already. One of the ground-launched missiles hadn't exploded in low orbit or targeted the Paramount. It was headed for the moon, and coming very close to the Auriga fire.
"That's either aimed at us," he said, "or it's the first escaping factory."
"First of all, let's get out of its way," said Jet, activating the ship's ion drives. "Second, Kalish seems to have it covered already."
Ula noted only then the dozen Blackhawks pursuing the missile with weapons locked. He was glad that someone else was on the ball. As the Auriga fire moved out of the path of the approaching missile, he noted that all the free jumpers had left their transports and begun their descent. Behind them came the infected ship. Its drives were locked on full, powering nose first into the atmosphere. That was official fleet policy now. When infected beyond all hope, crew members were to aim their vessel at the nearest target and ditch. Already its skin glowed bright red, and fragments of hull metal were peeling away, providing both cover and hazards for the freefallers. Voices called for him over the comm. 100 data streams awaited his attention. He couldn't sit staring at the hollow forever.
"Good luck, Lorin,"
he thought, trying not to feel like he was saying goodbye forever.
"I hope this is what you wanted."
Chapter 34. The VT-22 transport rattled and shook so much that Lorin could barely hear the countdown. Was that 1 minute or 10 to go? She checked the inside of her helmet, which displayed different views of the planet below, their path toward it, and the many, many hexes in their way. 2 minutes. That was the answer. She resisted the urge to quadruple-check her airfoil and jet chute before the hull opened up beneath her and dropped her into the void. Better to use that time to breathe deeply and calmly, and to remember who she had once been.
"Narung, keep an eye on those orbital sweeps,"
she said to her sergeant over the platoon's private channel.
"If you see anything that looks like a central complex, flag it."
New intel was pouring in every second from the transport and its escorts as they approached the surface of the world.
"Oz, watch the weather. It's your job to make sure we don't land in the middle of a volcano."
Oz was an Imperial, short on words, but willing to follow her orders. So far.
"Mond, your squad's the first down. Come in hot. Take no prisoners. I want you to put your best shots first. Jop, for instance. Let's see if he's as good at firing a rifle as he is his mouth."
"Yes, sir,"
said Sergeant Mond. The Zabrak, says Jop, muttered something too quiet to catch. He had been nothing but insubordinate ever since he had crossed her path again, reinforcing the chain of command.